Call the meeting to order and please stand for the pledge of the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please call the roll, Karen.
Wise.
Present.
Ballinger.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Edmonds.
Here. Okay, public participation. What you got?
Seth.
Seth, come on up. You've got 5 minutes.
Seth Reddington, I live here in Clinton. Couple years ago, I asked about the street. Jemima. Used to be Jemima. They changed it to Jemima Lane. And told it was never street. Well, it looks like they put a street in there. From German Street to where it dead ends. My question is, I drove down Madison Street, for instance, from Wilson's or Baum's, all the way to Kirby's. They put that road in. There's turnbacks at every intersection. Doesn't just parallel all the way down, it's turnbacks. When you put a street in, the street's a street. Runs start to finish, whether it dead ends or continues. I called and asked why they skipped the alley. Why wouldn't that street go continuous? And the question I have is, if you're going to put a street in, we all know on the council what I'm talking about. From Sherman Street to where it dead ends to the east, why would they have stopped it in the middle and then started back up?
Because it's an alley. It's not a street.
So what you're saying is...
Begin, you know, Seth, you know, we did you a big favor putting that in there.
You didn't do me a favor?
That was never a street there. That was never a street there. It's been proven when they put the street in. They dug down. They didn't find anything.
What it showed on the map from the early 1900s. Come from the
city. It's not a street. They dug up and didn't see any proof of anything there. You know, you one time you wanted it, next minute you don't want it. And they finally went in, we went in and put it. And the people that lived on the other side of that, I talked to them after the meeting we had. They were coming up here thinking that they was going to have that property. You know, the way they understood it, they was getting half that property. They wouldn't put a street in there. So, no, that's an alley going through there. It's not going to be oil chipped.
So you're saying that an alley trumps a street?
It's not. That was a street to begin with. That's an alley goes through there. That's what is not going to be oil chipped.
What's the name of that road?
Steve, you got anything to say on this? Nope. So.
So you're saying that that's an alley now? That's not a street?
Always been an alley that runs north and south.
I'm talking about east and west, Jemima Lane.
It's never been a street. Like I said, you got what you wanted. You've had a street put in there, and it was never a street to begin with.
I beg to differ. And your maps clearly show. Do I need to get the residents from down there that's lived there 50 years up here again to tell you there was a street there?
There wasn't a street there, Seth. It's proof when they dug it, like I said.
Well, the pavement that's there now is white rock and oil and chip.
Right, which most of our streets in town are.
Okay.
Regardless as that may be, the city at one point was going to move, regardless of whether it was or was not a street. If it was a street, we were going to move to vacate it for the benefit of the residents who were there. As you indicated you wanted, then you came here on a hearing and indicated and argued quite emphatically that it was a street, which did not bear any relevance on what we were talking about at that time. So again, to talk about as to whether or not it's a street is to question the relevance proceeding forward. Are you asking, are you arguing as to whether or not it's a street and so therefore the city should develop it?
It is a street.
Well, I'm not sure that the city's under any legal obligation to develop it. Okay?
They already developed it. They paved it.
Well, according to some members of the city, it is not. And regardless, we tried to vacate it. Again...
You can't landlock me. I'm saying they put a street in. The street's there.
Mr. Reddington, you came to City Hall. We had a discussion. We had an agreement. We came to have the...
You can't give me something I don't want. That's, we're not talking about that.
We came to vacate it, and you...
I never wanted it.
...argued something totally different.
I never wanted it to begin with. The whole thing is that's a street. You guys put it back a street. I just asked, when you ran that street, why did you start it, stop it at the alley, and then start it again, running east?
Because that's the alley that goes through there. It's an alley. It's not a street.
Okay, it's 5 minutes. Thank you, Seth. Any other public participation?
No.
Okay. Let's see. Minutes of the last meeting.
Minutes of the regular meeting of September 3rd, 2024 be approved as submitted.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second that.
Motion made and seconded. Please call the roll.
Ballinger.
Yes.
Buchanan.
Yes.
Wise.
Yes.
Edmonds.
Yes. Motion carried. And the bills.
General Administration, $4,068.10. Police, $17,834.86. Fire, $1,944.29. Street, $3,034.58. Parks, $18,127.02. Public Health and Safety, $1,875. Garbage, $1,263.42. Cemetery, $9,302.09. Water Operations, $124,345.97. Sewer Operations, $3,002.40. Drug Enforcement, $521.95. Special Tax Allocation, TIF 1, $435,032.03. Special Tax Allocation, TIF 4, $275,439.09. Warner Hospital and Health Services Operating Account, $537,642.64. Hospital Funded Depreciation, $167,161.07.
Okay, is there a motion to approve the bills and payroll?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion. Please call the roll.
Buchanan.
Yes.
Wise.
Yes.
Ballinger.
Yes.
Edmonds.
Yes. Motion's carried. Okay, Danny, I'll turn this over to you for...
I have a couple of guests here. We're going to move you on to the front of the program so you don't have to wait around.
Okay.
So if you guys would like to come forward, and I'll let you tell them your names and explain what your goal is.
Thanks. Oh, look at that. You are a high tech here. This is not Andrew Rain with me tonight, but I am, in fact, Pam Richard, co-director of Eco Justice Collaborative. Andrew wasn't able to make it tonight. And that's okay because it'll make it shorter, I think. So, and I expect that much of our time together is going to be in discussion. My organization, Eco Justice Collaborative, Landa's the other co-director. We're a small nonprofit based in Champaign, Illinois. We work on projects that protect people, land, and water. We work together successfully with Prairie Rivers Network to remove the coal ash from the state of Illinois' only national scenic river. It's still in process of being moved, but we got that done. And I think we have a pretty successful record when we work on things, especially when together. And we have formed a new coalition called the Protect the Mahomet Aquifer, which is the subject of the conversation that we're going to have tonight. So that's who I am, and you can ask me questions about whatever else you want to about us as we go forward. So if we, and you're gonna move the slides, yeah, Cameron? Okay, and thank you for being here to do that. So next slide, please. This is a familiar topic, I think, for all of you here. Did you all work on the sole source aquifer designation back in 2015?
No, that was county.
That was a county.
And I was on the county board.
You were on the county board. Okay. So in 2015, the US EPA did, in fact, designate this aquifer as sole source based on a petition that was submitted by a whole host of other governments. And if you're ever interested in seeing the petition, I have it. It's really telling about how important the aquifer is. What sole source means, essentially, and this is a map of the aquifer that you're looking at here, is that if in fact that aquifer were to be contaminated, there's really no alternative supply of water available for the residents who rely on it. And so it's really an important designation, and it is the only one in the state. A handful of sole source aquifers that are designated in the country. What you're looking at here in the striped area is the aquifer itself, where you've got the little bubbles in McLean and in Ford County. Those are recharge areas, and we're working to protect both of those areas, as you'll see from the current threat. So long ago, the threat was a landfill, and I think you all signed on to the consent decree for that. And then there was Peoples Gas that we'll talk about in a minute, and now there's carbon sequestration. And next slide, please. So what the heck is carbon sequestration and why now? Carbon sequestration essentially is the act of capturing carbon from a power plant, essentially, or an operation like an ethanol plant, an industrial source, let's put it that way, and compressing it, compressing it into a liquid that has the properties of both a gas and a liquid and is highly, highly pressurized. And in this process, they typically shoot it into a pipeline and then transport it sometimes very long distances, like thousands of miles, and sometimes very short distances into the ground, about a mile deep underground for sequestration. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, but why is that happening now? I mean, you maybe have heard about this. It's a technology that's been around for some time. But it really hasn't hit the main stage, so to speak, until now. And now is because the Inflation Reduction Act, the Biden administration, in 2022 increased sequestration incentives through what's called IRS 45Q from $60 to $85 a ton. Now, this is something that I just want to emphasize has been started way back by George Bush. Then it was increased by Obama, then it was increased by Trump, and then it was supercharged with the Biden administration. And that means whenever there's a lot of money, people want to find a way to capture the, no pun intended, the benefits of those incentives. So, and we're all talking about climate, right? So maybe you're not so much here, but that's something that nationally the dialogue is going on. And this is thought to be, and our organization doesn't agree with this, but it's thought to be a climate solution that now is supercharged with a lot of money. But why here? Next slide. What you're looking at here is a map that you can see the colored overlays essentially correspond to what we know is the Illinois coal basin. But the various gradations of color mean different things. And where you see the sweet spot pointing to the lighter yellow and orange and red, this is where everybody who is looking at this, in particular where I live with the University of Illinois, has decided to be the best place to store carbon dioxide. And that's for a couple of reasons. Number one, you've got a really deep aquifer formation known as the Mount Simon Formation that is about 5,000 to 7,000 feet underground. And then that area, which is saline and rock, is thought to be able to capture the CO2 and over time essentially make it become inert. To couple with that, there is a cap rock that's called the Eau Claire Shale, and that, again, is thought to be an impermeable rock. So everybody says, if you're going to do this, there's a couple places in the country that are really best suited for this, and Illinois happens to be one of those handful of places. So we've been finding ourselves besieged by a lot of CO2 pipeline requests, people from out of state wanting to bring CO2. And we think, you know, dump it like a waste, because it is a waste in Illinois, making Illinois a waste dump for this. And we've got a few folks that are homegrown here who want to continue doing carbon capture and sequestration. One is in Gibson City, one that we'll talk about in a minute, which is in Decatur. Okay, boom. Slide, please. So the concern is, and you've all heard about the ADM leak, and I'll move to that in a minute, but the concern is that there is no guarantee that CO2 can be permanently stored underground. There are a variety of ways within which it can leak, and the map on the left shows some of those places. It can leak, for example, along injection wells. It can leak through faults and fissures in the cap rock that exist today, or maybe are caused in the future by such things as natural earthquakes or induced earthquakes. When you put a high pressure a liquid into the ground for long periods of time, scientists are concerned that it can cause earthquakes. And there's a whole host of abandoned wells that we don't even know where they are that it can also find its way up. And if it does move its way into your drinking water source, in this case we're talking about the Mahomet Aquifer, it can acidify the water. It can then form carbonic acid, which then can leach out really nasty stuff from the rocks that can contaminate your water. So such things as barium and cadmium and arsenic and uranium and manganese, and that's what I can remember. Cobalt on my list is more. But they're nasty things that can cause cancer, they can cause liver damage, and they can cause anemia. So we don't want it. We don't want it to happen, right? We want to protect our water from that impact. Next slide, please. So here what we have found in Illinois, there are three projects that are in fact proposing to inject their CO2 through the Mahomet Aquifer or the recharge area. And the recharge area that I'm talking about is the purple one where One Earth is proposing to go. And together they would store 215 million metric tons of CO2. That's a lot of CO2 that would be stored over a 30-year period, something that is of a scale we haven't seen anywhere in the country, much less here in Illinois. Next slide, please. So you must say by now, well, isn't this stuff regulated? Well, it is. In 2010, does anybody here remember FutureGen? I'm old enough to remember FutureGen, but some of you might be too. FutureGen was a project that Dick Durbin fought for. It was a demonstration carbon capture project that if it had been built, would have been in Illinois. It cost us billions of dollars and never got built. All kinds of problems with it. But at that time, the federal government said, you know, we really need to think about providing regulations, because if this takes off, we want to have some safety measures in place. So they did this by amending the Safe Drinking Water Act, and they do have a whole Class 6 well permit process that does, in fact, date back to 2010, but it is a state of the art in what we have moving forward. So in the spring of last year, the state legislation passed a new law that says, okay, if you're going to come here, developers, businesses, corporations, you need to get a state permit as well as a federal permit, and we don't think the federal permit is strong enough, so we're going to do things over and above what the U.S. government did. And here are some examples that are in that bill. One of those I want to point out is in the middle that says if there's a leak and the water is contaminated, you have to replace it. We're going to talk about that in the next slide a bit. But it didn't include the Mahomet Aquifer ban, despite many of us trying to get that across the finish line. Next slide, please. So the bill actually does require, as I just noted in that middle bullet point, the operator to provide an alternative supply of potable drinking water. But guess what? As I opened my presentation this evening, I said that sole source designation says what? There's really no reasonably available alternative drinking source should the aquifer become contaminated. You can see this if you look this up on the Federal Register. There's a lot of good information there that I'm happy to provide you. But from the petition, it's the petition to the US EPA looked at a couple things. They looked at surface water source availability, and they looked at groundwater source availability. And look at these high numbers. if that water is to become contaminated, 92% of the public water suppliers who provide water to residents and communities and businesses and livestock, et cetera, and industry as well, we wouldn't be able to have an alternative water source because it's economically not feasible. Same thing for groundwater source availability. It's not economically viable to be able to provide that alternative for 77% of the public water suppliers. So this elevates the aquifer and the concerns of contamination up beyond other drinking water sources in Illinois. And I don't want to diminish and demean anybody else's water supply. Everybody's fresh water is important. But in this case, the US EPA determined you don't have another readily available supply. Next slide, please. So this shows you what's happening in the unprecedented scale. And I want to point out that these projects, and there are seven of them that are under review by the US EPA, and you can see the counties that they're in, and one of them is in your county. All of these projects are ready. They're currently under a technical review by the US EPA, but beginning late fall, they could begin to be issued draft permits by the US EPA. The first one that's in the aquifer is One Earth Sequestration, One Earth Energy's project, and the US EPA is currently planning to issue that draft permit on New Year's Eve, in case you all wanted to celebrate something. That's it. And they're planning to hold their public hearing on Valentine's Day. So I really don't know who put that calendar together, but it's rather bizarre. But all of these, if they were to be approved, could in fact be built and be under construction by summer, all at the same time. And again, look at what's been stored by ADM to date, and I have reason to believe they've said to me that it's more like 4.5 million metric tons, but the scale doesn't really vary much. It's a massive undertaking in a short time. And this, by the way, is not all that's underway. We could talk more about other projects that are underway that haven't yet made their way to the EPA yet. Next slide, please. So all those projects are over 100 times that stored by ADM. If you do the math and look at 3.94 million metric tons and the 456.4 numbers, that's really 115 times. But given the fact that I think ADM has stored more than the US EPA has yet to put up on their website, it's only 2022, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt and just say it's over 100 times. And next slide, please. The proposed storage under the aquifer and its recharge areas is 55 times that stored by ADM. So we're looking at what's coming our way and how it could affect the aquifer, knowing that it's that much bigger in scale than anything we've experienced to date. Next slide. So we know I'm from Champaign County, and therefore I moved to Champaign County, actually, with Elaine, and I moved there about the time that people's gas leak was hitting the news, and a lot of work was being done to figure out what happened and what needed to be done. And it took a lawsuit by the Attorney General to get people's gas to actually say, yeah, okay, we'll accept some responsibility for this and provide bottled water to people who were impacted. It took Chapin Rose to get money appropriated by the state legislature, your tax dollars and mine, to pay for design studies and put some money up front for construction. It took the Champaign County Board to appropriate some of their ARP money, whatever they got. When people got that, what is that act called during COVID? That one. That. So thank you. AARP is not it, but ARPA. All right, there you go. Thank you, ARPA. I am close. So the Champaign County Board, in fact, allocated money for design work. And guess what? There's not enough money, and the residents still do not have a replacement supply of water. Design studies aren't even done yet after all that time. That's an example of what we don't want to see. People's Gas knew they had a leak in 1995. It was discovered they knew they had a corroding well, in 1995. The leak was discovered in 2016, and still those residents are without water. Next slide, please. So that takes us to what you've all seen in the news. which I don't believe, Dan, when we met, it happened yet. Yeah, so this is new. The story broke on Friday, and it's been getting bigger since Friday. So one of the things you can see here is on the left, this is a diagram provided by WAN-TV and WAND-TV on Friday that I think is a pretty good representation of what we're looking at. And it's their graphic representation. It's not actual conditions. I want to point that out. But what you can see is that Eau Claire shale, that gray line towards the bottom there, that shale cap, the leak, in fact, was discovered to be above that shale line. So what we know here is that ADM noticed intermittent malfunctioning of their monitoring well, because one monitoring well did, in fact, leak, and it's been demonstrated and documented that it's leaked. But they noticed there was a problem, and the well was malfunctioning in September of 2020. The whole well's gauge and everything went haywire and malfunctioned by 2022 in January. And they discovered corrosion in October of 2023 and plugged the well then. In February, they talked with the US EPA to decide what to do and how to restore the well. That March, they found injection fluid around 5,000 feet and concluded it was from the corroded and plugged well. In June, the US EPA inspected the three wells, and by August, the EPA had issued a notice of violation to ADM because they were conducting activities that allowed injection and formation fluids into unauthorized zone. It is illegal, prohibited, shall I say, for them to allow their CO2 to go and move above the cap rock. That's the unauthorized zone. They failed, ADM, to follow an emergency response and remediation plan, and they did not monitor their well, so says the EPA, in accordance with their permit. One of the things that I think is interesting here is this was all done and happening, and nobody knew about it. The company didn't tell anybody. The US EPA didn't tell anybody. And it wasn't until a story broke in the news by an investigative reporter that anybody knew about it. So this is a concern that we have about putting CO2 under the aquifer. Can we guarantee that the CO2 won't leak? Well, people at Prairie State would have said before today, pretty much so, Pam, the chances of it leaking are really small. I want to point out that this project started in 2017. By 2020, they knew they had a problem, right? So that's an important thing to underscore. Next slide, please. And this is why we're here to say regulation is a risk. It's good we have regulation. We need it. We need to do what we can to protect people from potential harm. But we know a ban is certain, and when it comes to water like the Mahomet Aquifer, we're here to suggest to you that the ban is the better way to go. Next slide. The next slide. I forgot. I put him in the wrong order. I had to make sure we have an ask of you. You can't just leave here without an ask, right? So the goal of the campaign is to pass a sole source aquifer sequestration ban through the General Assembly. We already have Chapin Rose has submitted a bill. His counterpart in Vermillion County, Brandon Schweizer, has submitted a bill. Paul Faraci and Carol Ammons in our county have submitted a bill. They need to talk together, so we're looking at one bill, but I think that will happen. And we had 12 legislators when the bill was going through its public hearing process in the spring say we need a ban. So I think we have a lot of support for this going in. We also know that counties can pass a ban. And since the state bill was passed, Andrew Rain Prairie Rivers Network and I worked with a professor from the University of Illinois who said and has documented, and I may have sent that to you, that you can in fact adopt as a county and a municipality if you wanted to do that, that would be a text amendment to your zoning code. I'm not going to talk about that unless you're interested, but you can also ask DeWitt County to do that, and that's one of the asks of you tonight. So we want to see if you would pass a resolution, and at least one of them, which would be to call on the General Assembly to pass a sole source aquifer ban. it's possible this legislation could be heard as early as November, especially with the ADM leak. We know that the sponsor of the bill, in the House, Laura Fine, has agreed to co-sponsor an aquifer ban. That's huge, because she stood up during the public, during the signing ceremony for the bill and said, the aquifer's protected. She's changed her mind, right? Same thing with Senator Fine. Senator Fine led the charge to get that statewide bill passed. So I think we have some good momentum going, but it really helps to have cities and counties tell their state legislature, we want you to do this. You shouldn't be leaving this up to us. So we, I circulated a draft that we can talk about. But if you could do that, that would be helpful. We're doing road shows to try to see how many we can collect. And now you can go back to that slide and questions.
What we had thought we'd do for the ban, you know, we get all the information tonight and think about it for our 2 weeks at our next meeting.
Yeah,
we'll bring it forward. Isn't that what we kind of said? And then we'll vote on it at that. Everybody needs to realize that these borings for these wells go right through the Mahomet Aquifer. The casings go right through. And then down below, so if there's leaks and so forth, it can work its way out and work its way through. And it doesn't have to be in the well in our county. It could be the well over in another county that gets in and contaminates because it's all one big. So that's just stuff. And the reason I ask them to come tonight is because I'm the chairman of the Mahomet Valley Water Authority appointed by the county board. There's three of us. And, you know, it's a big concern. That's our sole duty is to protect the water. So that's how this fell together. So just so you guys have some background, okay?
This proposed resolution.
Pardon me?
City
Oh, I do, and I emailed it, but here, you may have a copy of it right here.
Look at
and I have a copy of the slides too that I just didn't know where I'd be sitting, and you know how just sometimes you have your back to the screen and you don't know. So but I'm happy to leave these with folks too.
I do want to get to me that she has a copy, so she'll get it to me.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay, great.
Pam, one question for you.
Yeah.
Very great presentation. This is obviously not the first time you've done this, so kudos to you. Very well explained. So if they recognize that this is a single source water source, how would they even come to even think about permitting something like this with the potential of the leak?
It's crazy. We haven't yet had the hearings before the US EPA, but the reality is, and this is something maybe Land can augment here, mm-hmm. but the reality is we had thought potentially that there would, because it's a sole source aquifer and the way the language is written in the Federal Register, et cetera, that they might have to do an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement, but they don't. The very fact of having a sole source aquifer program says, according to the federal government, they've already done their due diligence and they don't have to look at anything more than this. And that you couple with the fact that they are issuing draft permits, they are reviewing the applications, they think they're doing their job. So this means that folks like us have to come up, and we're going to do this, have to come up with the resources to hire experts to go to those hearings and gather all of you folks, and I hope you'll come, to go to those hearings and make comments. So that's our duty, right? Mm-hmm. But right now, boy, it would sure be great to have the state of Illinois say, sorry, we're not going to allow it here because. And there's something that's even more, insidious about this that I didn't say. Two of those projects are remnants of Navigator CO2 Ventures' 1,342-mile-long pipeline that would have brought their waste CO2 from four other states and into Illinois to put it in Christian County, DeWitt County, and County. And you know, the Christian County is not in the aquifer, but DeWitt and McLean are, as you know. The EPA, and I
talk to them about this, is moving forward with reviewing permits for projects, those two projects, that no longer have a source of CO2 identified, because Navigator's project has been bought up by POET, and the sources of CO2 that were going to come here are now going to North Dakota. There is no pipeline, there is no source of CO2, and yet they're going to be reviewing and potentially approving these projects. So something's wrong with the system, and I don't think I have to tell anybody here that, right? So, but that's where we are. And the woman that I talked to from Region 5, who's part of the Class 6 Well Program, said, I know how you feel, but we're going to do this. And the only way that that the permit would be revoked or changed is if, in fact, the number of wells changed. Like in DeWitt County, if I recall correctly, there's two wells. So now somebody wants to put in three wells, change the volume, and it changes all the modeling. Then they would say start over, and that's a good 2.5-3 year process. But otherwise, you could find yourselves with an approved project that would attract the CO2 here, because there's not even a source of it coming here at this point in time. So I think we feel pretty strongly about this, if you haven't picked that up already. But yeah, I wish I could say to you, in all of our due diligence and looking at all the petitions and the records and how what a soil source aquifer means and what protections it has and what it doesn't have, this is where we're at. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think one other point to make is that you were just seeing the beginning of an industry. This is not these are not the only wells that will come forward over the period of the next few years. You're going to be seeing more and more pipelines that need wells. Now, the EPA presumably will not overlap them, but there will be many more that could and would in fact penetrate the Mahomet Aquifer. So getting ahead of this and getting a ban on the sole source aquifer is very important, we think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. All right.
What makes our area so welcoming to them? Is it the way it is? There a way of the like the clay and the, because like I say, there's thousands of places out west that have no water supplies, that have nothing out there. Why aren't they drilling there and putting it down in the ground 3 miles deep?
It's a geology, because you have to hear, they, you know, the federal government doesn't want to see this leaking. And you know, if it did, it would mean all that money would be spent for projects that would have captured the CO2, put it in the ground, and it would be releasing it back into the atmosphere. So the geologists say our area, and also some parts of Texas and Louisiana and North Dakota, as I just mentioned, are prime spots as well. But Lynn is right. There are a lot of projects that developers, like British Petroleum, have said they want to bring industrial CO2 waste from the Ohio River Valley and bring it into Illinois. I mean, they're already talking about this.
Sweet old man.
So
they'll probably go where the easiest legislation is, too.
Yeah, well, they've got some stuff happening in Indiana now, but we have more capacity than Indiana has, and so. And we also have a governor who's very much about being able to say he's a climate advocate and he can protect the climate while also creating jobs. And I think there's that tension that's going on as well. So So our ask is that you look at that resolution, and yep. The second ask is, not knowing for sure where DeWitt County is, I think they'll be favorable to adopting a county ban. But you sure could ask them to do that as well, because there's no guarantee we're going to get this to the legislature in a climate where, one, we had a carbon capture and sequestration bill signed by the governor in July. And by the way, it was he signed it, and ADM was at the negotiating table and didn't say a word about this. And so that's the reality. And we're also looking at veto session, which means you have to have a supermajority or two-thirds vote to pass any legislation. So counties can take action, they can do it more quickly. So okay. That's it, and I will go away.
Thank you, and we'll take it under consideration and bring it up.
And let us know if you would. Keep us in the loop, because we'd like to potentially put the resolutions up on the website, protectomahama.com, so everybody can say, hey, they did it. Champaign, by the way, county is in the process of doing a moratorium. That's going to lead to a CCS ban in Champaign. So there are counties who are considering this.
Very good.
So, okay, thank you very much. You all have a good night.
Have a good evening.
Okay, report from the Department of Public Affairs. We have Constitution Week. Do we have anybody from the DNR here tonight?
She is not here, no.
Is she not here? Okay, Cameron has a resolution to read.
Constitution Week Proclamation. Whereas it is the privilege and duty of the American people to commemorate the 237th anniversary of the drafting of the Constitution of the United States of America with appropriate ceremonies and activities, and whereas Public Law 915 guarantees the issuing of a proclamation each year by the President of the United States of America, designating September 17th through 23rd as Constitution Week. Now, therefore, I, Tom Edmonds, by virtue of the authority vested in me as Mayor of the City of Clinton in the State of Illinois, do hereby proclaim the week of September 17th through 23rd as Constitution Week, and urge all citizens to study the Constitution and reflect on the privilege of being an American with all the rights and responsibilities which that privilege involves. In witness hereof, I have hereto set my hand and caused the seal of the City of Clinton to be affixed the 17th day of September of the year of our Lord, 2024. Signed, Thomas Edmonds, Mayor of the City of Clinton.
Okay. I have one other thing to bring up. I'd just like to remember the family of Ted Roseman and your thoughts and prayers. Ted passed away, and Ted was street commissioner, I think in my second term in office. So remember them, please. And report to the Department of Streets and Public Improvements.
Just got a couple things. Of course, week from this weekend is our annual Apple Port Festival. I just want to remind everybody that we're going to have the same closing streets. Center Street will be pretty well closed starting Saturday morning, open back up in the evening on Saturday and Sunday evenings, say around maybe 6 o'clock or so. So just ask people to avoid that area. You won't be able to drive down it with your cars. And everybody be careful, because we're going to have a lot of people in this town, especially if the weather's decent. The sidewalk project is wrapped up. I guess there's just a little bit of a punch list they've got to go through, so that's all done. So, and that's all I've got.
Okay. Department of Public Improvements.
No, I don't have a whole lot. As you know, we've been working on the water plant. They've been doing some of the preliminary work. The CO2 revamp should start shortly, maybe by next week. They've got the equipment and everything ready to go, and they're going to be working on that. Engineering is proceeding well. We talked to Greg and them, and they are getting that, and it's proceeding on the other parts of the project. And next week, we will be having, a few years back, we had leaks that were just not coming up. Steve can verify. We've had stuff that's going into sewers or doing things that, with our, you know, we can hear it on a hydrant, but trying to track it down rather than just start in a spot and hopefully that's it and just keep digging until we finally run into it. We're going to have the gentleman that came in a few years ago with the sounding equipment that he finds a leak. He found three or four during that process that we'd have never, ever located. They were just in places that was just, you wouldn't think about it, like down there on the old bridge on Main Street where it came from the electrician's area there. It was so deep and down below us, sewer, and was leaking right into it, and it was just not showing up at all. And he found three or four that was just things that we just couldn't locate. And he's coming back into town. We've got a couple of areas that he's going to come in and listen and try to locate and pinpoint a couple of leaks, because we're still having some leaks that are running too much. So he'll be here next week, just in case somebody sees someone strange up and down the streets or whatever, and they need to know he's going to be coming in to take care of that. And other than that, everything's been going smoothly. I'll knock on wood, because every time I do that, you know, it comes up with something else. But the things are running well, and all the departments are really working well together and getting the stuff done. So appreciate that. And that's all I have.
Thanks, John. Department of Public Health and Safety.
Well, my big part's already over. Sorry it took longer than we figured it would. But the other thing I have, now that school has started, a lot of little kids out running around the grade schools and so forth. We've had a lot of complaints down at the Lincoln School area. Certain vehicle is just racing there all the time. And we today, out on Route 54 toward Farmer City, we had a very bad accident involving a worker, a construction worker that got hit by a motor vehicle at a high rate of speed. I'm just asking everybody to pay attention to what they're doing and watch all these little kids. Watch everybody. Get off your phones because it was a bad one today, and we don't want to see any little kids hit down there. So I've asked Ben to step up around the schools, see if we can put a stop to it. So that's all I have.
Okay. Department of Accounts and Finance, we later on have a couple resolutions to approve, considering some taxes that were approved by the state of Illinois. One of us to replace a tax, and I thought maybe Clint could talk to that a minute.
Sure. So I don't have the House bill in front of me, but I believe it was 3144 that was passed, and the governor waited until the last day to sign it. So the state removed the 1% grocery tax, but gave local communities, because they don't benefit from it, state doesn't, so they wanted to get it off their plate, put it on our backs. So they took off the 1% tax effective January 1 of 2026, but they gave local municipalities the ability to put it right back on at the same rate. Along with that, they also gave us the right to approve non-home rule sales tax by ordinance or resolution now, as opposed to referendum as it used to be. As you guys know, we've got the big infrastructure project coming up with the water tower, the main, having to redo Quincy Street when that main's done. And that is the other piece of this that will help pay for that project. So that would be an additional 0.5% sales tax, and still does not apply to any titled product. So any vehicle, farm equipment, boats, anything like that, just as it was before.
Okay, thanks, Clint.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now we go on to unfinished business.
Approved grocery tax ordinance number 1606.
I make that motion.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion. Please call the roll.
Wise.
Yes.
Ballinger.
Yes.
Buchanan.
Yes.
Edmonds.
Yes. Motion's carried.
Approved non-home rule sales tax ordinance 1607.
I'll make that motion.
Aye, second.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion. Please call the roll.
Ballinger.
Yes.
Buchanan.
Yes.
Wise.
Yes.
Edmonds.
Yes. Motion's carried.
Approved facade grant application with Snapper's Barn Grill in the amount of $22,494.84.
Make that motion.
I'll second that.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion. Please call the roll.
Buchanan.
Yes.
Wise.
Yes.
Ballinger.
Yes.
Edmonds.
Yes. Motion's carried.
New business. We have an ordinance authorizing the sale of excess personal property for water and sewer department.
And I would like that to add fire department surplus equipment also.
There was a new version of the ordinance that was submitted that did include the fire department.
Okay.
Items.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Hazard warning lighting for the new pickup trucks from Ron Equipment in the amount of $5,684. The 2024 fire prevention material for the fire department from Positive Promotions in the amount of $6,474.68. And the Parkland Subdivision utility installation with Ameren electric installation cost of $72,616.75. Gas main extension in the amount of $46,880.64.
And I'd like to go ahead and move that forward for unfinished business. Go ahead and vote on this so we can get this in, get it done.
Approve the Park Lane subdivision utility installation with Ameren Electric Extension, $72,616.75. Gas main extension, $46,880.64.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Discussion. Please call the roll.
Wise.
Yes.
Ballinger.
Yes.
Buchanan.
Yes.
Edmonds.
Yes. Motion's carried.
Was we going to try to move the sale of property forward or just leave it?
Anything else?
No.
Nothing else to come before the meeting. We'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Ballinger.
Yes.
Buchanan.
Yes.
Wise.
Yes.
Edmonds.
Yes. Meeting adjourned.